Up next, how to make your life a little mathier. In her new book, The Calculus Diaries, writer Jennifer Ouellet makes the case for calculus. Now, don't get nervous. This isn't the anxiety-producing calculus class that turned many a budding scientist into an English major. This is calculus without the equations, calculus for poets, if you will. In the book, Ouellet shows us that calculus is everywhere around us, from amusement park rides to the craps tables in Vegas. And she argues that having a basic understanding of how calculus works can make the world a little more interesting. So even though you may not have the urge to pull out some graph paper and a mechanical pencil to work some equations, you may come away from the book with the feeling that the calculus isn't such a scary thing after all. Joining me now more to talk about it is Jennifer Ouellet. She's the author of The Calculus Diaries, How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. Yes, that too. She is also director of the Science and Entertainment Exchange. That is a program at the National Academy of Sciences. And she joins us from our NPR West studios in Culver City. Welcome back to the Science Friday.
Oh, thanks for having me.
You know, I'm really glad you wrote this book because I am one of those people who really appreciate what calculus can do. I'm not smart enough to actually be able to do the math myself. I studied calculus in college, but I really got a good feeling about how calculus is everywhere, involved in everywhere.
Exactly, and I think that's what this book is trying to do. I mean, there's lots of books out there that are trying to teach you calculus, that can walk you through the derivations. I do a little bit of that towards the back in some of the appendices, but really, I wanted to impart on people exactly what you're talking about, that calculus is everywhere around us. We're soaking in it every time we ride the roller coaster, every time we calculate compound interest, every time we catch a baseball or surf a wave in Hawaii. That's all calculus, and it's kind of like the language of nature, and we can't see it unless we speak that language or at least know enough to be able to, say, read the menu. It's kind of like knowing just enough French to be able to order in Paris.
You know, you were an English major, so how did you get into calculus?
I actually got there via way of physics. I became a science writer. I started working for a physics organization and started visiting physicists' labs and talking to them and seeing how they actually used math and science on a day-to-day level as opposed to how it's usually taught in the classroom. Mm-hmm. It's way cooler when you actually get to go to a lab and see them build a laser than it is to learn about the principles of stimulated emission in a textbook. But you end up picking up those concepts nonetheless by being there in the real world and being able to play with the laser and maybe help out a little bit, and it just makes it so much come alive and so much more real for you. So when I started to write the book, I said, well, calculus, make me care. And how am I going to make myself care enough and be engaged enough in this discipline to really want to finish a book on it? Right. And I did that by going out into the real world and creating my own calculus problems.
Talking with Jennifer Ouellet, author of The Calculus Diaries on Science Friday from NPR. I'm Myra Flato, our number 1-800-989-8255 if you want to talk about calculus. You know, it is really interesting that I think Richard Feynman summed it up very well when he was asked a question about by an artist that, you know, I'm an artist, I can appreciate a flower just for its beauty much more than you can. And he said, there are all kinds of interesting questions that come from a knowledge of science, which only adds to the excitement and mystery and awe of a flower. It only adds, I don't understand how it subtracts. Right, and that's basically what you're saying in your book, is if you understand and you look at nature around you with a knowledge about some of the calculus that's going on, you get to appreciate nature more.
Yeah, there's a story I like to tell. Shortly after I got engaged to my husband, who is a physicist and who helped me a great deal on the book, we were driving along the Pacific Coast Highway, and we stopped at sunset because it was gorgeous. We figured, well, we're not going to miss an ocean sunset. So we're standing there side by side, and we're watching this beautiful sunset, and the waves are lapping up against the shore. And I'm thinking how romantic, and he puts his arms around me, and he whispers, wouldn't it be fascinating to take a Fourier transform of those waves? And a Fourier transform is essentially a calculus equation to take a complex wave and break it down into its component parts so you can understand what made that wave special, what made it what it is.
You know,
I use that as an example because I looked out and appreciated and loved this beautiful sunset, but he saw something that I had missed, and he made me look at it with new eyes. And that's what I think that's what Feynman's talking about there.
I'm such a geek that I actually have those same thoughts. I'm almost embarrassed to admit.
You know, I'm starting to turn into that person where I see a sand pile and think, ooh, I know what that is.
Yeah, or why does it stand up like that in the ocean? You know, the whole business with sand and piles and
exactly.
All kinds of mathematical theories. 1-800-989-8255. Let's take a quick call from Jennifer in Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, I'm one of those would-be science majors who suffered through 3 semesters of calculus making C minus, minus, minus. I'm now an English teacher. I teach high school students, and I would love to be able to have a few strategies to help my English students get more interested in calculus so that I can kind of teach across the curriculum. Does she have any suggestions?
I do, actually, and this is kind of backed up by some of the math teachers that I've spoken to as well. You have to find a way to engage them in a discussion of the problem. Rather than kind of jumping right in with the abstraction, you kind of want to lead them up to the water, and then maybe they'll drink. That's why I call the book kind of the gateway drug. So what I would do is I would find an example, a calculus problem that you want to solve, simply introduce them to the situation, a roller coaster ride, say Space Mountain, and talk a little bit about what's involved there and start talking about the various, you know, filter out what's important, have the students kind of figure out what's important and what can be forgotten and how they're going to construct a problem out of this. Sooner or later, they're going to realize that they can actually, it'd be easier if they could just simply assign a variable, a symbol of some kind to kind of describe one aspect rather than having to, it's a mouthful to keep repeating it. And that kind of leads them automatically into the infrastructure, into the framework of the math that you're going to be using. But you've got to engage them first. If their minds aren't engaged, if they're not interested in the problem, they're not going to follow you into the math. Stories are wonderful since you're an English major. One of the things that I deliberately did was look up all the history. Calculus is full of these amazing personalities and this fantastic history. And sprinkling your lectures or your classes with some of those, talking a little bit about how this person solved a particular problem and then helping the students solve the same one and kind of follow in that person's footsteps. These are all ways that can make math and calculus in particular come alive to a student like I was, trust me, who really resists that sort of thing.
We're going to come back and talk lots more with Jennifer Ouellette, author of The Calculus Diaries, How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. We'll get to the zombies in a minute, so stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Jennifer Ouellette, author of The Calculus Diaries, How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. And Jennifer, before we get to the zombie apocalypse, let's talk, how do you describe to someone who knows nothing about calculus just what calculus is?
Yeah, it's kind of like trying to describe the color blue to a blind person sometimes. I mean, that's certainly how I felt when I started. But it turns out that it really is just talking about change and motion, specifically rates of change, which is the derivative. And if you think about motion, motion is essentially changing position with respect to time. And so you can add all those up and take an integral, and that will give you, say, if you know just your speed, you'll be able to figure out what your final position will be, and you can make predictions. Mm-hmm. So that's really all it is a tool to do those two things. And they're opposites of each other. The derivative and the integral are like a hammer. You know, one pounds in the nails and one pulls it out. But calculus is just one tool in the vast mathematical toolbox that we have. And so, mm-hmm. you know, I think it's important to understand also the context. Mm-hmm. So once you know it's about change in motion and you think, what in my life has to do with change in motion, there's a lot there.
Mm-hmm. Especially zombie apocalypses.
Yes, yes. We don't really think that zombies have anything to do with math, but it turns out that calculus is used in epidemiology to study disease outbreaks, changes in population over time, sometimes brought about by disease, and to also evaluate counter strategies. If you've seen Zombieland, you know that the premise of that film was that the zombie outbreak was kind of a mutated form of mad cow disease. So there was an epidemiologist in Canada, Robert Smith, who actually wrote a paper about this. He applied one of his mathematical models to zombies, and he used it to essentially predict what would be the optimal strategy for wiping them out. Which I'm happy to share with you if you want to know what the secret is.
Absolutely.
It is not hiding them all. That's a very passive strategy, and it's not going to stop the spread of the zombie disease. And you notice in the movies that never works either.
Right.
It turns out that if you do nothing, the zombies pretty much spread rapidly and wipe out the human race in about 4 days. The only way to stop that is to basically take on the Zombieland strategy. It's that nut up or shut up, lock and load kind of thing where you kill as many as possible as fast as possible. So you do a series of very short, fierce, concentrated kills of as many zombies as possible, and that's the only way to get their population culled enough that the disease will stop spreading. But I thought that was a fascinating example of using popular culture, of using the zombie phenomenon, and saying, you know, this can be fun as well. And I can say, for someone like me, there's an appendix in the book where I actually run through the actual derivative. It was really hard for me to do that derivative. I mean, I got bored halfway through, but what got me through was the zombies. I was having so much fun solving the zombie problem that it made me kind of push through the hard parts of this particular equation that, frankly, was a bit beyond my skills at the time.
Well, you know, we were entering our 20th year of Science Friday, and I never thought we'd get that far to solve the zombie problem in all these years. 1-800-989-8255. Kay from Menlo Park. Hi. Welcome to Science Friday.
Oh, thanks. Yes, I was just thinking about, and often think about while driving, the inefficiencies in driving when people change their, go from a first derivative to a second derivative, and they don't have enough space to fit in and squeeze in, and then they end up putting on the brakes, and then, of course, that has a domino effect on the traffic behind it. So I was just wondering if you could comment on the usage of first and second derivatives in a more efficient way, or maybe an understanding of it.
Are first and second derivatives for us, for people that don't know what they are?
Well, the first and second derivatives, I mean, essentially, the functions in calculus are actually all connected to each other. So if you say no position, from that you can kind of, you know, that is related to velocity, and in turn velocity is related to acceleration. So you can refer to a first and second derivative in that terms, you know. So you would take, say, a double derivative or a double integral if you wanted to go two steps down.
So if you know one, you can get to the other one, basically.
Exactly. And sometimes you got to get to the other one through a more indirect route. You've got to get to your goal through a different function, but you'll get there eventually.
Yeah. So if you know what the acceleration is, you can say, well, I know I'm accelerating at any one time. I can then figure out what my speed is, and that would
exactly. And from your speed, you can figure out your position.
So calculus helps you figure out how to do those things. Yeah,
exactly. The traffic problem is actually a little more complicated, and I do talk about this actually in the book towards the end of chapter 2. Traffic. You know, physicists are still trying to understand traffic. They're still applying some very complex mathematical models to this to find out what the optimal strategy is. What happens is at some point the density of the cars reaches a critical threshold, and at that point even a slight braking will just ricochet, and you'll have this ripple effect through the traffic, and every single car, you know, will be affected. And that's why you get those, you know, molasses-like slowdowns periodically for no apparent reason. Mm-hmm. How you combat that has yet to be determined. I mean, they're still working on refining those models to find an optimal strategy, but that is definitely a place where calculus can help.
Ben in Baton Rouge. Hi, Ben.
Hello. How are y'all doing?
Hi there.
I just got a quick question about this has any application in, I guess, soft sciences, like how do you calculate the rates of the rise of terrorism in the U.S. or the world?
Can you use it? Yeah, good question, Jennifer. Can you use it to calculate, let's say, patterns of terrorism?
Similar to the zombies.
Right? Yeah, actually you can.
Good question.
Your model is only going to be as good as the data that you get in. But social networking in particular has been a very important tool in this. There's a scientist named Nathan Eagle who's at the Santa Fe Institute who actually uses cell phone data to do this, you know, to track people's behavior, to track their whereabouts. And he can actually deduce a lot of information about them just from tracking where they are, you know, with their cell phones, who they call, you know, where they go at certain times of day. It's amazing how much we reveal about ourselves through that data. And that's exactly what he's doing. I mean, it can be applied, again, to epidemiology. It can be applied, as you say, to national security to kind of ferret out terrorist rings. And it can simply be used to find out more about that 6 degrees of separation phenomenon of, you know, the friendships that develop.
Thanks, Ben. Have a good weekend.
Thank you. You too.
You're welcome. 1-800-989-8255. Why was calculus invented to begin with?
Yeah, it's interesting. It was actually invented to begin with because nobody could figure out how to find the area under a geometric curve, believe it or not, which seems a really kind of silly thing until you realize that geometric curves are the faces of mathematical functions, which in turn describe nature. So, for instance, a parabola describes the motion of an apple that's tossed into the air and then comes back down. And Isaac Newton has that wonderful anecdote of him getting hit on the head with the apple and him suddenly saying, oh, this actually, you know, is related to what I'm working on here. Geometry calculus is geometry in motion. Curves are geometry in motion. So it's no longer a static, you know, parabola. It actually means something. It can be used to represent something in real life. And then he invented the tool that he needed to develop the theory of gravity.
Isn't there some controversy over who actually invented calculus?
Yes, and we should mention Leibniz, mm-hmm. Yeah, just to be fair. What happened was they both developed it independently. Probably Newton developed it further, but he didn't publish. So it was really only available if you could figure it out. It's there in some of his calculations, but he didn't really publish it. And Leibniz became the first person to publish it. He developed it independently. He hadn't seen Newton's work. So there became this huge controversy, the calculus wars, with Newton and Leibniz just vying for the title of creator of calculus. Right. And I think it's a lesson out there to scientists that you want to publish your results. Otherwise, you might get scooped.
Same thing happened with the transistor. 1-800-989-8255. Reed in Havana, Florida. Hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you. Just to add a little levity to this otherwise very scientific conversation, my wife is an adjunct math professor at a community college in Tallahassee, and she got a kick out of this the other day. I'm a math aficionado, although I'm not good at it. But I saw this bumper sticker. I'm sure Jennifer's probably heard this, but I hope your listeners will get a kick out of it. It said, calculus majors should not drink and derive.
Yeah. And neither should physicists.
I just thought that was great myself. And the truth is, as little as I've done math over the years, I know drinking and deriving would probably not be beneficial.
Your answers would be all over the place.
Oh, it's a triple pun. All right, thanks for calling, Reed. 1-800-989-8255. Do mathematicians have a sense of humor? Jennifer?
You know, I think it depends on the mathematician, but I think so. Yeah, certainly math teachers do.
Yeah.
They have to. I mean, they're in the trenches. I think there's a math teacher, a high school math teacher named Dan Meyer. He says, look, I'm selling a product that nobody wants, but everyone is required by law to buy. You've got to have a sense of humor if you're going to, be in the trenches like that all the time. Mm. But yeah, they have a great sense of humor. It tends to be geeky humor. You tend not to get the jokes if you don't speak the language. It's like anything else. You know, for most of us, if they might as well be talking in ancient Sanskrit.
Mm-hmm. Now, I can't let you go without telling us in one of the subtitles of your book, how math can help you lose weight. How can calculus help you lose weight?
Yeah, well, obviously, you know, calculus, you just simply have to burn more calories than you can. To lose weight, you just have to burn more calories than you consume. But if you think about what's involved in that, you're talking about metabolism, which is a burn rate, a rate of change. And you're also talking about exercise, the rate at which you are burning up calories. You can add that up. You can take an integral to figure out, you know, how many calories you've burned over a set amount of time. So your Stairmaster is actually doing this calculation all the time. And your body, as it's burning calories, is essentially doing derivatives. And so you ought to figure out how you can optimize your diet and your exercise in a way that still maintains your quality of life in order to achieve that. And you can actually do it with very, very small changes, was the point of the book. Mm. I think I ended up working in a kind of optimization problem so that people could kind of figure out what they could cut out a little here and increase their exercise here just a tad and actually could lose weight consistently.
If you wanted to teach calculus to non-science, non-math majors, what would be the best way to approach it?
Well, you know, at some point you've got to get your hands dirty and actually do the math. I don't want anyone to think that I'm not saying that you can just teach the concepts and people will come out knowing how to do calculus. Mm-hmm. But they are going to be far more willing to work through the kind of tedious parts of solving the calculus problem. Let's face it, the hard part is creating the actual problem, figuring out the interesting question to ask. What is interesting about this situation? What questions can I ask here? And how can math and calculus help me solve that question or answer that question? That, I think, is how you would have to approach it in order to get to do a physics for or a calculus for English majors kind of class. Because if you're not going to tell us stories, if you're not going to get us engaged in a way that is active and hands-on, then it just becomes us memorizing rules and kind of crunching numbers. And, you know, trust me, even though I did well in my algebra classes in high school, it didn't mean anything to me because I was just blindly following the rules. Mm. And I think if that's the case, if we're not reaching people like me who would naturally be inclined to like science, then maybe we need an overhaul. Mm.
But there's hardly a math problem or an equation in your book, The Calculus Diaries, until you get to the appendix where you can choose if you'd like to see that.
Yeah, that was actually quite deliberate because I'm trying to reach people like myself, you know, and I think that even me, when I started, if I had seen a book with a calculus equation in it, I probably would have not picked up that book. Mm-hmm. I have to overcome this knee-jerk reaction, this knee-jerk anxiety that I've had all my life. And I think that's one good thing that's come out of writing this book is that I no longer feel my stomach tighten up when I see an equation. I actually, now I want to kind of like know a little more. Well, can I figure this out?
Yeah. Well, if you'd like to know more, I highly recommend Jennifer's book, The Calculus Diaries. If you're afraid of calculus, this is the book for you. How Math Can Help You Lose Weight, Win in Vegas, and Survive a Zombie Apocalypse. Jennifer Ouellette, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me. This was great.
You're welcome.